Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the Education Finance Division to order. We have a quorum. With that, Representative Sandell, pardon me, would you be so kind as to move the minutes of our February 27th meeting?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I certainly would. I move acceptance of the minutes of last week's meeting.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Sandell motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Sandell. Members, we do have a busy day focused on student support and safety. We will be starting with House File 1363. Representative Hewitt, welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Mr. Chair, I would.
Very good. With that, sir, please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, I am excited to be here with you again today, although I'm a member. just to keep that out of it. This grant is exciting because you've already done so much to get the schools a little bit safer and a little bit more proactive in the mental health area. We've done some structure changes to a lot of our schools, and that's because of the legislator before I was seated here, and I thank you for that. My own district, 196, benefited from some of those grants that you did. But now, again, it's time to focus what goes on inside the schools, and that's what we're going to kind of talk about here with this with HF 1363. And this is not a new bill. I wish I could say I have an original thought. They told us in an orientation. Representative Carisha told us this, that there is no original thought, so don't think you have one. And so, to repeat his words, you guys did this before, and this is more of a bill that basically we're going to re-up here again today. It really aims to for additional critical funding for our support staff in a grant inside the schools. The support of our students in a grant program that was created in 2016 provided dedicated funding, $12.1 million, to help our school districts hire licensed support staff, including school counselors, school nurses, school psychologists, school social workers, and chem depth health counselors. Support our school grants, the support our schools grants for the last 6 years, the first 4 years, it's a one-to-one match. The final 2 years, it's 3-to-1 match. We felt this approach recognizes the tough spot that many districts are in when it comes to making new hires. The phase out of this funding is a recognition that as a support professional becomes ingrained, as a support professional becomes more part of the staff, that they will actually get hired by the school is what will happen here. And that's what we're seeing with your current grant. Realistically, this didn't benefit my own district in 196 because we missed out on it. My district is in trouble. We are $24 million in the hole. We are going to look at letting go of 20 positions. We need this help right now. It's not the total fix to our problem in our school, but it's a big help. I have a couple people with me today that I'm going to turn it over to because I'm going to stop talking. First of all, I have Scott Austin.
Tom Tilbury.
Sorry, Scott's the next one.
Yeah.
And Mr. Tilbury informed me that he's a former rep.
Yes.
So it's fun to see him here, and I'm going to let him take over here and talk about how the program benefited Roseville Schools.
Representative Tilbury, welcome back to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record. Proceed.
My name is Tom Tilbury, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota School Counselors Association. And, yes, I am a former legislator, and I could tell you all the good times and some of the bad times, too. but I have been at Roseville Area High School for the last 23 years as a counselor. And even though I was in the legislature for the time that I was there, I took leaves of absences, and then I would return to my position the day after session ended. So that's how I kind of rearranged my life for that. House File 1363 is based off a groundbreaking, legislative-driven grant program that invested $12 million in 2016. And it was a bipartisan-type bill because I remember that Republicans were in charge of both Senate and House at that time, and we passed the bill off that off that particular piece, and it was one of the only things that passed that year due to the supplemental bill, if you recall. So those of you who are here with that, it was one of the second items or a good sum of money for that, and it was $12 million for that, same kind of concept that this bill has. Now you're probably wondering, how has that bill helped? Well, there were 77 new support staff that were hired across the state, 40 of which were licensed school counselors, and the rest of the positions were varying from nurses to social workers, psychologists, and so on. With this particular bill, it helped out quite a bit, and so it was something that was a starting point. I would like to say, though, unfortunately, where we rank is still close to the bottom throughout the nation as far as how many student support staff are here. So we desperately need help with that. I would ask your help. I think a lot of you know where my passion lies based on when I was here at this time and how we really fought for funding. So once again, this bill is for that purpose.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tilbury.
Next, we'd like to call up, Mr. Chair, Scott Hostessa. I knew I was going to screw up his name. However, I'm proud to say he's from my son's high school, Rosemount High School.
Very good. Mr. Ostis, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Scott Ostis. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1363. My name is Scott Ostis, and I'm a licensed school counselor at Rosemount High School in Representative Hewitt's district. Although this is my first year at Rosemount High School, I've been a counselor in District 196 for 5 years. At RHS, we have five counselors in our building, and each are responsible for attending to the needs of 450 to 500 students. School counselors are often the front line of mental health intervention for students. We know that our students are struggling. We know they're struggling with anxiety and depression. We know that in 2016, 111 Minnesota kids between ages 10 and 24 died of suicide. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, suicide is the second leading cause of death for this age group. We see evidence of struggle all over, from suicides at Mountain View High School to horrific school shootings in places like Parkland, Florida. In my own experience as a school counselor, I've recently worked with the family of a student who refuses to come to school, trying to figure out a plan for them to get them through our doors. I've worked to support a student struggling with self-harm and trying to find more healthy coping strategies. I've recently worked with a student who revealed a situation that required contact with Child Protection Services. These are often complicated situations that require lots of time and attention on top of our other responsibilities, and can leave less time for equally critical duties meant to reach all students, such as career and post-secondary planning. You hear a lot about the extraordinary caseload of school counselors and how Minnesota students struggle more than students in nearly every other state when it comes to being able to access school counseling services. This has been my experience and the experience of many of my colleagues. We know that this is not unique to school counselors, but rather a struggle that all of our student support service partners face. I will tell you that licensed school counselors are an incredibly important part of ensuring student academic success, promoting safe schools, and encouraging healthy communities. Our students need more of us to help them address life's challenges and prepare for the future in productive and healthy ways. House File 1363 makes tremendous strides in providing funding for more student support staff while allowing school districts flexibility in who they hire to meet the needs and allow us to do more for our students. Thank you to Representative Hewitt for authoring this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Ostis.
Next, Mr. Chair, we have Kaylee Sapowinick, a school counselor from Adams Elementary School.
Ms. Sapowinick, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Callie Sapinek, and I am an elementary school counselor in the St. Paul Public Schools. I work currently at Adams Elementary School in St. Paul. I've been there for the last 7 years, and prior to that, I was a school counselor for 2 years at the high school level. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House Files 1363. I'm very familiar with the everyday needs of our students, and I know the challenges that face our youngest learners. We just heard Scott speak a little bit about the needs of his students at his school, and he spoke a little bit about some of the concerns that we have with our students regarding suicide and suicidal ideation. And he spoke about the number of students who we have seen die by suicide between the ages of 10 and 18, I believe, in Minnesota. And I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about the younger students, because suicide and suicidal ideation is something that we have been seeing even younger than that. I work with students ages 5 to 11 at my elementary school. And in the last 4 or 5 years, I have seen the number of students who have expressed interest in suicide or suicidal ideation, thoughts of suicidal ideation, I've seen that number increase drastically. I deal with probably at least one student ages 5 to 11 every week who has expressed thoughts of self-harm or thoughts of killing themselves. And we have definitely had at my school attempts or near close attempts of students trying to hurt themselves or even kill themselves. And this is something that my school is dealing with, but I know that it is something that also other schools deal with. My school is by no means one of the highest need schools in St. Paul. We have our demographics laid out fairly evenly. We're a fairly middle of the road school. So if this is an issue that I know that we are dealing with and we are facing at my school, I know that it is a very big issue at other schools who have more mobile and transient populations than we do, more homeless population than my school has. And I'm here today to say I know that there is a real need for school support staff in our schools. The need is real. We are short in school counseling. We are short in school social work. And we are short in other areas where we need our support staff. So I suppose I want to end by saying that there's a lot of attention being paid to this issue. And we recognize that increased funding isn't always the answer, but maybe in this case that it is, that increased funding could help us support our students who have really very real thoughts of self-harm, of dying by suicide. And in the interest of increasing support staff, this is a really real thing. So I would like to thank Representative Hewitt for authoring House File 1363, and thank you to all of you for starting this conversation. And that's all that I have, but I would be happy if there's any questions.
Thank you very much.
We have one more testifier, Mr. Chair, and that is Mr. Matthews from Valley Middle School in Apple Valley, Minnesota.
Good morning, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joey Matthews. I am currently a history teacher at the Valley Middle School STEM in District 196, Apple Valley. I have been teaching for 27 years over 3 states. One of Webster's definitions of unpacking is to analyze the nature of by examining in detail. In my classroom, unpacking is the time I spend trying to figure out why a student is irritable, why a student cannot keep her head off the desk, why a student doesn't want to interact with myself or his peers. With a classroom of 30 students, I don't have the time to unpack and still deliver the daily content to meet the Minnesota State standards. Also, I don't have the expertise nor the training and to counsel the problems I face. The student's irritable because he's going through gender transition and others are making fun of him and he doesn't seem to fit in. The student can't keep her head up because she didn't get any sleep last night because she slept in the back of a car. They're homeless. The student does not interact with others because he does not want anybody to see the bruises from the abuse he's experiencing. These are actual situations that I deal with. Without support professionals, I, and more importantly, my students would not be able to face or persevere over these situations. Over the years, I've seen significant changes in the issues our students are now facing. Gender transitioning. Due to a student's gender transitioning, impacting their learning and overall mental state, it's been valuable having these people, these professionals, as a resource, acting, aiding me in the experience to help them. Just to mental health issues, kids with mental health needs often have outbursts. Counselors help me to help them to understand what is wrong, give me techniques of how to deal with them. Just to be clear, they cannot learn when their emotional, physical, and mental needs are not being met. The counselors, these professionals, social workers, psychologists, help me to help them. One reason why we're so passionate is that teachers want to teach because that's what we're trained for. It's what we're good at. We're not good at being teachers and psychologists and housing consultants and chemical dependency counselors, refugee advocates, data analysis, and so on. Hiring more support professionals helps the students with the most needs. We all know that. It also benefits the hundreds of students I teach every day because these professionals give me more time and energy to focus on being the best teacher I can be. I'm Joey Matthews. I'm a proud teacher, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Representative Hewitt, we have on the list also Dr. Annie Hansen-Burke. There she is. Dr. Hansen-Burke, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you. My name is Dr. Annie Hansen-Burke. I'm here to represent the Minnesota School Psychologists Association. I work primarily at the University of Minnesota in the School Psychology Training Program and also have the opportunity to work in some of our public schools around the area. I'm here to speak a little bit about school psychologists and what we do and how we contribute to the support of our students in schools. School psychologists bring an emphasis on prevention and early intervention to support the mental health and academic needs of all of our kids in schools. We do this through promotion of a multi-tiered systems of support model in which we support mental health and aim to reduce the achievement gap by systematic screening to identify problems early, matching of evidence-based interventions to kids' specific needs, and then monitoring of that progress as kids move forward and go on. School psychologists provide direct intervention. We provide consultation to teachers and administrators in schools, and we provide assessment to see what we're doing and whether it's working. In my role at the University of Minnesota, I also have the opportunity to really feel the shortage of school psychologists across the state, along with our allied student support professionals. Every year, I, in my direct practice, and my students are in the position of having to recognize that we can't meet the needs of all the students that are facing us, and so we have to choose who needs immediate support and who can wait. And that's a really unfair and kind of sad reality for kids in our schools that I think you've heard from the other testifiers as well. This grant and this bill take steps forward to try to bridge that gap so that we can close the achievement gap in our schools and we can meet the mental health support needs of all of our kids through our collective work in our public schools in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Hansen-Burke. Representative Hewitt, I also have a Marissa Gustafson on my list, and there she is. Ms. Gustafson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Marissa Gustafson. I'm here representing the Minnesota School Social Work Association. I'm also a school social worker at a high school in Minneapolis. I'm here in support of this House File 1363 as it contributes to meeting the need to better support our students and our families in our education system and thus our communities as a whole. I've been working in and support of education for the past 9 years. I hold a master's degree and 2 licenses, one from the Educator Licensing Board and the second from the Minnesota State Board of Social Work, like all of my social work colleagues, which requires additional training, supervision, and a licensure exam. As social workers and critical members of licensed support professionals in schools, our expertise and role is to support students, families, and the school community so that learners are ready to learn and teachers can focus on instruction and meeting the needs in the classroom. I want to thank the gentleman teacher who spoke. I think he was really eloquent in making that point. We know that students who are not achieving or who are falling in the gap often have co-occurring circumstances that are preventing them from reaching their learning potential. As we expect more and better outcomes from teachers and our schools, we have to invest in the supports that facilitate that. In my role, I'm responsible for supporting between 600 and 900 students at my high school. My daily work includes responding to crises of self-harm, suicidal ideation, and those going into or returning from treatment or hospitalizations. Recently, I spent the bulk of a school day and into the evening with a student who had shared their intent to end their life. I sat with that student, assessed the risk, and then coordinated with the parent, county child crisis services, and eventually we called an ambulance to ensure that student's safety. Supporting them back at school is an ongoing responsibility. There are other significant issues that can impact student mental health and their ability to do school. I support students dealing with grief and loss, abuse and trauma, living on their own, chemical dependency and addiction issues, students who are in foster care or experiencing other family crises. Earlier this week, I met with a student for the very first time who had not shared with anyone at school that his mother passed away suddenly. I was able to offer support and guidance to him while honoring his request for privacy and normalcy. And again, supporting him will be an ongoing responsibility. I also support day-to-day needs of students struggling to be in class and learning, work to ensure that we are meeting the needs of students with medical or educational disabilities as best as we can. I think school social workers are uniquely trained as problem solvers, risk and safety assessors, and collaborators and facilitators, particularly in intense and difficult situations, all while we are looking at the whole system, the whole family, and the whole child. As such, we're able to address a wide range of needs presented by our students and families, along with our other licensed support professionals in school. My concern is that we're not adequately responding to the needs of these students. At our school every day, more than 1,600 students walk through our doors, and we meet their social, emotional, and mental health needs as best as we can so that they can focus on being students. Often, we cannot get to all of them. Although grant programs are not the long-term solution, these are needs that are critical and acute for many students and families, and just like our educational gaps overall, we cannot simply wait for the perfect solution. We must take action where we can and where we know it is most urgently needed. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I have one last testifier on the list. I'm going to say Jolie. My apologies. Jolie Holland, of course, from the School Nurses Association from Howard Lake. Not Waverly, Howard Lake. Good to see you again, Ms. Holland. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come here today. My name is Jolie Holland, and today I'm representing the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. And we want this committee to know that we fully support House File 1363. We would like to also see for the grant this year, when the bill is passed, that more school nurses could be part of this bill. We believe that the role of the school nurse, the licensed school nurse, is more critically important today than at any other time. We are the only healthcare providers in the education system that can provide case management and address the health concern needs and put together health plans for students. We supervise and train staff, and when I heard the people testifying today, we often deal with those issues as well. And in fact, a lot of times we're the first ones to see and recognize possible mental health issues that can start as psychosomatic issues like stomach aches, headaches. They're in the health office at fifth hour every day. They're absent. And so we follow up on those things, and we help to address those issues with parents to rule out physical causes and also to see if there's mental health issues. The law that was passed 30 years ago said that there should be one school nurse for 1,000 students. That you could have 5,000 students, and they still only require one school nurse. The American Academy of Pediatrics came out with a position policy statement in 2016, and they're asking for a school nurse in every school. Well, we know we need to make some baby steps, so we would like to see more school nurses in the state of Minnesota. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Representative Hewitt, I understand you have no one else on your list to testify?
My list is clear.
Very good. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1363? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for the bill author or for nonpartisan staff, the last time this was funded as a grant to increase the number of support people in our schools was in 16, so nothing in the 2017 budget or the 2018 supplemental budget.
Madam Chair, Representative Pryor, yes, that's correct. The legislation that has funded the grants was that passed in the 2016 legislative session.
Representative Pryor, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe the reason it wasn't funded because it was vetoed. It was a great idea, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. Nice bill. And I just have a couple of things that I want to get clarification on. And Representative Pryor actually touched on something important, which creates a gap. The purpose of the bill, as I understand it, is to add new positions. I think that's is that? And you don't necessarily
Senator,
have that.
Yes.
That's pretty clear. And so as I look at the session law, and by the way, I'm just trying to add improvements because I think this is a really good bill. Mr. Strom, the session law defines new position as somebody that's not under contract during when that session law was passed. Do you know if that's true or not?
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia, if you look in the bill on page 2.6 of the existing language, the language reads, the commissioner shall specify the form and manner of the grant, and in awarding the grants, the commissioner must give priority to schools in which student support personnel positions do not currently exist. So to the extent that a grant provided a support position now at a school, presumably that same language would apply.
Representative Crescia, follow up?
Yes, and thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. Yeah, so, yeah, because to that point, this one I want to get clarification to see in your bill is, I do not believe the purpose of the bill would be to fund positions that are currently under contract. And this is just what I want to get clarification on. Let's say that you had somebody that was under contract in 15-16, but they were not, or they were still on contract. No, let me take it this way. If you were hired in 17-18, but not 15-16, you would technically be considered a new position. And what I'm hoping, or at least so you can get clarification on the road, is that a school wouldn't just use this funds to fund that position, not actually hire new people, because as I believe the purpose of this bill is to get new positions to change that ratio. So that would just be something I would bring up for consideration to make sure we haven't created a gap there. I don't know if the bill author wants to respond or testify.
Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia. Yes, exactly how you're saying it. If we have to work on some language in the bill, we will do that.
Okay. And then one other follow-up.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, again, thank you. Well done on the bill presentation. The other thing is that you might consider doing, or I might offer out, rather than doing this hopscotch approach with grants, because that's essentially what we do, what if we were to do a change the ratio, just put that into a guideline or a law that we change the ratio, because that's really what we're trying to get to, and do ongoing funding. Would that be a more, maybe a better approach or something you may consider?
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia, I am excited to hear you say that, and let's work on that together. So I think that's something we all want to do, right?
That's why I brought it up.
All right, thank you, Representative Crescia. Nice dialogue there. So if there's no more questions, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tilbury, good to see you. I enjoy serving with you. Are counselors mandatory reporters?
Representative Hugh, Mr. Chill?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we are mandatory reporters just like really any employee out of a school district. We also assist in like teachers who may not do this every day and report. We would maybe even do that as a support to them. Granted, they would have to report because they're the first person that have heard, and then we would assist them, maybe even phone up, you know, to the child protection setting. We'd help them, guide them through, and then all the paperwork process that follows.
So, Madam Chair, Erickson, follow?
So, Mr. Tilbury, if a teacher sees a student come into class with bruises, they must report that, correct?
Correct.
Mr. Tilbury?
Thank you. Correct.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up. Mr. Tilbury, do counselors or nurses or social workers or psychologists within a school ever call on faith-based, for example, pastors or ministers? I'm thinking about the teacher who noted or the counselor who noted that a child had lost his mother and not told anyone. And it seems to me that a great resource might be to call the priest or the pastor or the imam or the rabbi. Does that happen in our schools?
Mr. Tilbury?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, it does happen in our schools as long as the parents and family would like that to happen with the religious piece. I think what happens, especially when a suicide hits to our particular district, let's say, we would have partnerships with whoever we could get into our schools to help us focus on that because it's such a demand. But it also, we do want to have people that are qualified to be working with students and helping them through the needs that they have. That's the only thing that we would look at. But usually when it comes to a religious background or something, it has to really go through the families to okay that.
Thank you, Mr. Tilbury. And seeing no further questions, we'll lay Representative Hewitt's bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. That's House File 1363. So next up we have Representative Pryor's Safe School Levy Increase, continuing with our week of safety and health in our schools, which we'll cap off with tomorrow in ed policy. So as Representative Pryor moves to the testifier table, it was the chair's intention to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So, Representative Pryor, would you like to move your own bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 514.
Thank you. Representative Pryor moves House File 514 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually a relatively simple bill, but can have a really big impact on districts across the state. What we're doing in this bill is we are increasing the amount of school levies. The amount would be increased from $36 per pupil to $72 per pupil. As you know from the bill, the language that's still in the bill, that school levies can be used for a number of different purposes to support school safety. It can be used for school resource officers, drug abuse prevention programs, gang resistance education training curriculums, the cost of providing in-school security and security for school property, crime prevention, drug abuse, student staff safety, suicide prevention, and violence prevention measures, licensed school counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists, and alcohol chemical dependency counselors, facility security enhancements and equipment, improvements of school climate, and school-linked mental health providers. We have a number of testifiers that have been willing to join us this morning, including my fellow Rotarian. Tuesday mornings, a.m., and now you know why I'm not there, right. Tuesday mornings, a.m. Josh Swanson, Superintendent of Eden Prairie School.
Superintendent Swanson, welcome to the committee. Later in transportation, we're going to talk about Rotarian license plates, and as a fellow former Rotarian, thumbs up. So, Superintendent Swanson, do you want to state your name for the record and proceed?
Yes, absolutely. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Josh Swanson. I'm the superintendent at Eden Prairie Schools, and I'm here today to testify in support of House File 514. I appreciate the prior testimony as well because it highlights that there isn't one single thing that's needed for school safety. There's lots of different things that need to take place. And to ensure that our schools are safe, we need to make sure that we're creating a strong and supportive climate and culture for our students. We need to make sure that we have staff in place who can support our students and educate our students. And we need to have physical safety and security that's present in our schools. This bill provides flexibility that all schools need to really focus resources and be able to prioritize as we meet the needs of our various districts and communities. In Eden Prairie, we currently use our Safe Schools levy to fund security staff at our high school and our police liaison officers at our high school. And I will tell you that our security staff at our high school, they create critical relationships throughout the day. And if you just watch them do their work, they create those bonds and connections with kids to understand what kids' needs are and help make sure that we connect kids in all kinds of different ways. The current allocation only covers a portion of those funds. And so we rely on our capital budgets or other general fund dollars to fund the balance of our current safety and security needs throughout our district. And the current funding isn't adequate to be able to do that. It also, we have lots of things that we would like to be able to do, but that we can't do because of resources, and so that this would allow us to move that forward. I'd also, although I'm not testifying right now on House File 579, I know you're going to hear that later, and those two bills in concert together really would create a good benefit because it would allow us to address some of those capital needs that we can't currently get to, and this bill allows for that flexibility to be able to fund the things that we need from a staffing perspective. And so I would encourage you to consider that as we go. Thanks to Representative Pryor for putting this forward.
Thank you, Superintendent Swanson. And before we move on, I just wanted to note, and I'm sure, I'm sorry if Senator Erickson was going to maybe do this before I did. There's some FFA students in the audience from Malacca, so I just wanted to thank you for being here to witness the political process. And if you have any questions later, sure, track one of us down and ask. So, all right, who's your next testifier, Representative Pryor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to introduce Mark Zuzik. He's the superintendent of Eden Prairie, Intermediate District 917.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zuzik. Superintendent Zuzik, go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here briefly just to talk about two quick things about intermediate.
Sorry, Superintendent, school. I forgot to have you.
I am Mark Zuzik, Superintendent.
Just in case we're saying it wrong.
Thank you. I am Mark Zuzik, Superintendent of Intermediate School District 917. Our member districts comprise the bulk of Dakota County and also Bloomington. There are four intermediates throughout the state, and I'm here briefly to talk about two ways that intermediate school districts are different from the majority of school districts in the state of Minnesota, which, of course, are independent school districts. The first is we provide services on behalf of our member districts to the kids that are the most challenging to educate and the kiddos that were having a hard time being successful in their home school. And so we're providing education to approximately 1% of the population, and very often those kiddos, because of their struggles, whether it be with a significant learning disability, autism spectrum disorder, or a behavioral disability, they can be violent, they can be aggressive, they can be dangerous to themselves and to the people around them. And so our safety needs are very compelling. And the second important thing to note about intermediate schools is that intermediates don't have the direct authority to levy the tax base that we work within. And so what we do instead is we work with our member districts and on our behalf they help us to levy in their districts. And so we're asking that same authority continue as it currently stands and increases to the extent that it at the same ratio that the independent school districts have the ability to increase. Mm-hmm. And with that, I just want to thank you, Representative Pryor, for bringing this forward. And Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Superintendent Zuzik. And I think we have a question. Actually, is there, do you want to take, we can take questions as we go. I think we have a question from Representative Jergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to welcome Superintendent Zuzik. Prior to being Superintendent Zuzik, he was Principal Zuzik at the Hastings Middle School. And I had the opportunity to tour the Hastings Middle School with Mr. Zuzik as my tour guide. And I remember on that day, there was a student that had, I would call it, a minor meltdown. And I was impressed with the way you and your staff handled it, and I'm sure that that's more of a daily occurrence in your new role. And I, we spoke earlier, and you invited me to tour the school you're at now, and I do intend to take you up on that when time allows. But I just want to welcome you here today and thank you for your testimony.
Madam Chair and Representative Juergens, thank you very much.
All right, next testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Abner-Holden, can you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member Sue Abner-Holden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and I'm just here to testify in support of House File 514. There's kind of two things about the bill that we really support. One is really allowing those multiple approaches in terms of creating a safe school. You know, it's not just plexiglass, right? It is school support personnel, you know, the social workers, the nurses, the counselors, the alcohol and drug counselors. It's all of them helping to have that school be safe. It's also looking at school climate, whether that's positive behavior intervention and supports, to make sure that we keep those things going in our schools where they have it and, you know, adding schools into the future. It's also looking at safer settings. Sometimes we, I think, downplay the importance of the environment. We have worked closely with the intermediate districts, and we've seen that when they've actually been able to change the environment of the building, of the classroom, they're actually able to kind of, kids become more soothed in that environment. And so those kinds of things are really important, too. And then secondly, we really support the increased funding for the intermediate districts. Again, we've worked very closely with them. We know the children that they're trying to serve. They do need more resources in order to help those children become successful at school and in life. And so both of those things, I think, are really important parts of the bill, and we just wanted to add our support to it.
Thank you, Ms. Abner-Holden. And then I believe we have Ms. Dietrich heading down to the table. Could you please state your name for the record, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And on behalf of the school boards across the state, we would like to thank Representative Pryor for bringing forth House File 514. Mental health services to students is one of the most pressing issues for school districts across the state. And for that reason, we support most of the bills and much of the testimony that has been provided today already and will be to some degree or another. But I just wanted to point out that increasing the Safe Schools levy is on the 2019 MSBA legislative platform. And the primary reason is that because to an increase to the Safe Schools levy provides equal access to school psychologists, licensed counselors, social workers, nurses, and all the other professional staff necessary to provide early interventions and violence prevention. And I'm going to provide a caveat here. Unlike grant programs of the past, where they provide revenue for some school districts that that qualify for that grant or where there's enough revenue. And then the other school districts are left out. And I'd like to give the fast-forward example of that is as we travel the state at the end of session, we go out and we do a session summary. When we're talking about something that was passed, such as a grant, there are more of the participants of that meeting that don't get the grant than do. So they are hard-pressed to find that as a real advantage that came out of the legislative session when they are not one of the recipients. So with that, understandably, nobody wants to raise property taxes. However, the impact on a $200,000 home in the Safe Schools levy is already very minimal. In fact, on a run that I have from October 2018, on a $200,000 home, a state impact is about $8 per home. But with that said, we would suggest to Representative Pryor that she work with the tax chair, who just happens to be in this committee, and provide equalization to offset any increase in the property tax that would be as a result of this bill. And that would really be a benefit to our property poor school districts. And then one further thought that I would like to leave this committee with is there's been a lot of talk this session about full-service community schools, and we would challenge Representative Pryor and ask if she wouldn't want to try to expand the definition of safe schools or the qualified expenses to include a full-service community administrator or coordinator to the list of acceptable uses. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for your time, and I will stand for questions if there are any.
All right, Representative Pryor, any follow-up questions before we move to testimony?
No.
Okay, first, actually, I'll ask, is there anybody else in the audience that would wish to testify before or against this bill? All right, then. And any questions at the table? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the representative instead of the senator.
Well, yeah,
I don't want my Malacca students to think I'm sitting in here as a visitor when they know that I'm their representative. Thank you. My question is for Superintendent Zuzic.
Superintendent, could you please state your name for the record again and answer? Thank you.
Superintendent Mark Zuzic. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Superintendent, when you have to go to your member districts for an increase in the Safe School Levy, how does that appear on the tax statements for everyone who's in the intermediate district? Is it a separate line item, or because they're board approved, so do they differentiate?
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair. The way that it's reported, it comes through with their other school taxes. And that's, again, that levy authority rests with the member district. And that's the reason for that.
Representative Erickson, follow
up. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, so the citizens don't know that there's a little part of that that's going to travel to your intermediate because it's blended in with every district, right?
Superintendent Zuzic.
Yeah. Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say that as part of the public record in the board notes, it would be recorded that a portion of that levy authority is being asked for on behalf of the intermediate school district that serves their community, and then there's a formal transfer of that money from the member district to the intermediate.
Representative Erickson, sorry, I have not had enough coffee for 5 hours of sleep. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, well, that is very good to hear, because then at least in the minutes it will show that was something that you made public and the voters or the residents would know. And then a follow-up for Representative Pryor. Do you think your caucus is going to have a levy target?
Representative Pryor, I don't know if we know that question yet.
I don't have an answer to that. Madam Chair, Representative, okay. I don't have an answer to that.
Thank you. Okay, we'll wait to see. Thank you.
Any further questions at the table? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if Representative Pryor or perhaps Mr. Strom knows how long a safe school fund has been a category of our legislative funding or of local levy funding.
And Madam Chair, Representative,
sorry.
I was going to try to bluff and say, oh, well, I know that, but I don't know.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Sandell, we'll check to make sure, but I believe it was in the early 90s when that levy was first created. It's been increased a few times since. And just one last note, in terms of Representative Erickson's question, the intermediate school districts used to have taxing authorities separately to themselves, and in those years when that was the case, on the tax statements, their levy showed up under the special taxing jurisdictions. So, but that's been since the mid-90s, those levies have now been combined into the member district levies.
Representative Sandell, follow-up.
One quick follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. My guess would be that individual school districts, not uniform across the state, have asked for those safe school levies. Would you think that's correct?
Representative Pryor?
Yes, and then one of your spreadsheets does talk about what exists now and how things would be increased and how the money has been spent in the past.
And I think Mr. Strom has a follow-up to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandell, very few school districts levy less than the maximum in the safe schools category. If you look down in the printout that Representative Pryor has in her folder, if you look at the amount per district there, nearly every district is at the full $36 per pupil. There's a few that you can see, a few districts in that column called baseline district levy that have zeros, and then there's just less than a handful of districts that levy less than the maximum. So there's a few that don't levy at all and a few that levy less than the maximum. But otherwise, all school districts use the maximum $36.
Thank you, Mr. Schramm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions? We're going to renew the motion then to lay over House File. Sorry, flipped my page over.
514.
House File. Thank you. 514 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we're going to have a quick restructuring of the schedule because Representative Richardson has to get to another committee, so we're going to have her go next.
Thank you, Representative Pryor.
Representative Richardson, if you'd like to move up to the testifiers table. And Representative Krisha, thank you for your patience on this. We're going to have Representative Richardson go next. And Representative Richardson has 15 House File 1594 before us. It's going to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Would you like to move your own bill, Representative Richardson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Richardson moves House File 1594 to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Would you go ahead and start your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1594 would appropriate $700,000 in fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21 from the Workforce Development Fund to DEED for a grant to the YWCA of Minneapolis to provide job training, career counseling, and job placement assistance to individuals facing economic challenges interested in pursuing careers in early childhood education. The program will help them secure a child development associate credential. Currently, the program is funded at $500,000 per year. This is a foundational post-secondary credential that qualifies participants to enter the field as early childhood teachers. This training opportunity provides a pathway to economic independence. The program takes about 9 months to complete, and participants receive individualized support and case management services throughout the process. Since the program began in October of 2016, there have been about 250 participants have gone through the program, and 92% of those participants are currently employed in the early child education field. And they have a cohort that's also set to graduate this June. It's a cohort of 79 participants. Increased funding would allow the program to expand their service delivery area and to increase participation to an estimated 200 participants. And so with that, I can stand for questions or introduce the next testifier.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. I think we'll go on to your first testifier. Will you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Paula Landis. I'm with the YWCA Minneapolis, and I am the program developer and the instructor for most of our classes. As you probably know, but it bears repeating, the field of early childhood education is in desperate need of teachers. Not only is it in desperate need of teachers, but it's in desperate need of teachers of color and people that are culturally and linguistically diverse. The diverse population of our students has continued to grow, and it's going to continue to grow, but what we don't have are the teachers that match the cultural and linguistic diversity of the students and the young children that are in care, in early care and education right now. So what our program does is it specifically allows entrance to the program based on economics, and then there's about 80 or more percent of our participants who identify as of color. 24% of our students identify as immigrants. The rest are U.S. born white. All of us are low-income people. So what's happening is we're filling the gap of the lack of teachers of color in the field of early childhood education right now. It's also important for you to know, if you don't know already, that while we all know that the field of early childhood education has a lot of teacher turnover, right, where the turnover is highest is also in our highest need communities. So children of color are losing teachers of color at a more consistent rate. So it's like a churning effect that's happening. And then as our older, more educated white women leave the field of teachers, there's nobody that's replacing them. Okay, so our program is designed to support the communities of the children and the communities of immigrant and people of color where it needs support right now. So we do really, really ask wholeheartedly for your continued support, and I thank you very, very much for your time. I'll take any questions if you have them at this
moment. Thank you, Ms. Landis. I think we'll keep moving on with testifiers if you can stick close for questions. Representative Richardson, would you like to bring your next testifier up?
Yes, I'd like to ask Stephanie Thomas.
While Ms. Alma comes up, will you please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony?
Hi, everybody. My name is Fuzia Elmi. I'm immigrant mother, and also I'm low-income family. This program, it's helping me a lot, and also it's changed my life. I used to work in nurse assistance, and it became for me very heavy to lift since I'm not familiar before. But I was working 10 years about nurse assistance. Then I go back to school and I took association degree of liberal arts. Then I couldn't afford to go more further that because if it's a loan and I couldn't afford that, then I go back for this program to help my family, my kids. Then I become a teacher in YWCA, and my dream is it going to be to open my business about childcare. Because of this program, I couldn't go that direction, the direction I used to have, and now I have another one, new day for me, because I learned a lot of things about the early childhood education, and I'm a lot of support for this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Elmi. And then you have one more testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair, Lisa Bandoli.
Would you please come to the table, state your name for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Lisa Bandoli, and thank you for your time. And I just want to say that I'm a high school dropout. I went to night school to get my diploma from my high school. But not only did I have that obstacle for secondary education, I also I was at poverty level. I've battled homelessness. But this program gave me an opportunity to achieve a dream that I never thought I could. It's lifted me above poverty level. It's taken me off of the food SNAP program or any other aid. And anything that benefits children is well worth the money for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vandelay. Representative Richardson, did you have any other testimony?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that would wish to testify before or against this bill? And I think we'll go to member questions. Representative Kresha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Richardson. As you know, I'm a long supporter of early childhood programs, and I think this is great. And in the spirit of trying to get this through, I'm wondering what is the path, and I think, Madam Chair, what was the motion? Where does this go?
Representative Kresha, it's going to Ways and Means.
And then do you know what's the recommendation after that?
Jobs.
Okay, that's what I thought I heard. So Representative Richardson, Madam Chair, members, when will this go through Early Childhood Committee, then, if we're going back to Ways and Means and then Jobs? No. Do you know?
Representative Kresha? Yeah, I don't think it was asked for by Chair Pinto at all. So I don't think it has plans to go to Early Childhood.
Sarah. Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Kresha? Oh, actually, I think Representative Katiza Boutine has that answer for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I can speak on behalf of Chair Pinto that he would probably like to see this bill in committee. I'm not sure if it was on his radar.
Okay. So. Representative Cortez Ratoon, why don't we'll continue. I'm a little stuck here just a minute since I'm temporary chair. So thank you. So what we're going to do, we're going to continue with this motion to Ways and Means, and then we'll loop in Chair Pinto and figure out where it goes next.
So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Kresha.
Just a couple of things. I'm glad you're going to do that. A couple of things. I really do want to see this go. I mean, you could lay the bill over and move it by memo, I believe. I mean, you can discuss that. I'm trying to help. I'm not trying to gum things up. But I really am, and thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon, because you want to avoid the dreaded re-refer motion on the House. And that's really what I'm trying to alert you to is do this right, pick this up. I'm sure Representative Pinto would love to take that, and I'm not trying to make this ugly, but you could lay it over, re-refer it, and probably fix this very quickly. But however you want to do that,
Representative,
I'll leave it there.
The most transparent way right now would be to send it to Ways and Means, and I don't think any of us really dread the re-referral on the House.
Okay.
Because that's not what I've heard, but. Well, it's such a good bill. I don't think it's going to be any problem. So.
Exactly why I brought this
All
up.
All right.
I
thank you.
Wanted to do that.
I have Representative Erickson on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Ms. Pera.
Ms. Pera.
In line 1.8, the phrase economically challenged individuals is used. Is that defined in statute?
Ms. Pera.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I am not aware of that definition being in statute. Often in the education world, when we're talking about low-income families, we use the free or reduced lunch kind of threshold as a proxy. I'm not aware of that being in statute.
Madam Chair.
Erickson.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Pera. So, Representative Richardson, do you know if when this goes to jobs, is there a definition found within that arena of law that would fulfill what economically challenged individuals mean?
Representative Richardson.
Madam Chair, at this time, I'm not aware of that, but it's something that I can look into.
Thank you. I think it would be good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it would be good if we had something that's a little more specific and that follows statute. Thank you.
Any other questions at the table? Representative Richardson renews her motion to move House File 1594 to Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The motion has been approved. All right, next we have Representative Krisha. Thank you for your patience. And as Representative Krisha, as you move up to the table here, we are going to be hearing 579, House File 579, sorry. And would you like to move your bill? And then it's my understanding that you also have an author's amendment to put the bill in the shape that you would like. So if you want to move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move my bill and then move the author's amendment.
Okay. Representative Krisha moves House File 579. We're going to be laying this over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. And he'd also like to move the author's amendment labeled.
I will move the A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
A1 amendment. Thank you. Representative Krisha's moved the A1 amendment. Do I see any discussion? Do you want to explain the amendment first?
It's an author's amendment.
Okay.
I'll get to it.
And then do I hear any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Krisha's moved the A1 amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? A1 amendment has been adopted. Representative Krisha, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. The bill reflects language that we agreed upon last session in negotiations with Governor Dayton. It's formulating a school safety package that unfortunately was vetoed in the 2018 supplemental omnibus bill. And editorial here, I hope that this bill fares better in your omnibus bill than it did in ours. In summary of this bill, it expands the authorized use of long-term facilities maintenance revenue to enhance school safety through physical modifications, including remodeling, new construction, public announcement systems, emergency communication devices, or equipment and facility modifications related to violence prevention and facility security. Expands the authorized use of general debt subject to the district's debt limit to include public announcement systems, emergency communications, and other equipment related to violence prevention and facility security. Allows bonds issued and financed with Safe Schools revenue. It converts the existing Safe Schools levy to a Safe Schools revenue program, providing an additional $18 per pupil in state aid to the existing $36 per pupil for a total of $54 per pupil with a $30,000 minimum Safe Schools revenue floor. $18 per pupil in state aid for charter schools, which is new revenue as charters are currently excluded from the Safe Schools levy. And $7.50 per pupil in state aid for cooperatives, which thank you, Representative Pryor, for us working in conjunction with. We're able to bring them in through the pairing of these two bills, which are currently not funded through the Safe Schools levy. The existing $15 per pupil levy for intermediate school districts is supplemented with one-time state aid of $6.50 per pupil. And the existing $36 per safe schools levy is equalized with additional state aid to subsidize low property value school districts. This proposal also includes some measures from last year's supplemental omnibus, including $2 million for physical security audit grants for public schools, $400,000 for school resource officer training grants, $273,000 for suicide prevention teacher training. And if I might add, it was a great bipartisan effort. A lot went into that as we put forward, and I'm very happy to see this moving forward in the same manner. And so with that, Madam Chair and members, thank you for your time, and I'd like to introduce my testifier, Julie Sink.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Julie Sink, and I'm the Executive Director of Business Services for Prior Lake Savage Area Schools, and I also represent Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. There's no bigger concern for school districts than schools' safety for children in our schools. And I believe that anything that you can do as legislators to help us and allow us any type of flexibility to and increase these funds for the districts would be helpful for our school districts. Last year, there was $25 million of grants allocated to the state of Minnesota for school safety. And I think you all know that there was over $250 million of requests from school districts, almost 10 times more than what was the grants that were allowed. And I think so you can see that there is definitely a need out there for physical spaces for safety for students, the cameras, expanding memories for our camera systems, the radios, interacting with our local law enforcement, doing tabletop exercises, as well as, like I said, the physical areas in our schools. I do want to thank you very much, Representative Kreisha, and all of you for considering this.
Thank you, Ms. Sink. Representative Kreisha, any follow-up? Otherwise, we'll go to see if there's any other testifiers.
No other follow-up.
All right. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify before or against this bill? All right. Now we'll go to member questions. Any questions at the table? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kreisha, the $20 difference between the 2019-2020, was that a scientific number, or was it just cost of living?
Representative Kreisha.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Murphy. We came to that because we knew we needed to bring something in, and it was just a starting point. I'm happy to talk about what other where we could go with that number, but in the conversations that I had with some of the folks that are supported the bill, this was a good faith effort to try to get some more room on that.
Okay. Representative Murphy, follow-up. Representative Hewitt.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, is there anywhere in the bill where funds could be used for environmental concerns for safety?
Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hewitt, please specify, what exactly are you looking for?
Representative Hewitt?
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, so if we found a school to be in hazard of lead or in hazard of mold or something like that, could any of this grant apply towards that, or is there...
Ms. Singh.
Madam Chair, we do already have through long-term facility maintenance the ability to remediate mold and those types of issues through the old type of health and safety. We do have that ability currently.
Madam Chair, Testifier. So that would include this new thing with radon remediation in the schools, and would that be something that would be in part with the considered in this grant?
I'm missing.
Madam Chair, yes, radon currently is not included in that. However, if that is required with a new bill, we would like that to be a bit available to us to use through this long-term facility maintenance as well.
Okay, one last question. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. And Representative Kreisha, we've heard in the news the last couple of days of a school down in, I believe, the southern part of the state that they're concerned that their roof is going to collapse because of the snow. Again, I'm looking at safety for the children. Is that part of this bill possibly, or would that be somewhere else?
Representative Kreisha or Ms. Sink, whoever would like to answer.
Madam Chair, yes. The replacement of a roof would be included in our long-term facility maintenance program as provided currently.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any other questions at the table? Then we renew the motion to lay over House File 579 as amended for possible inclusion. Actually, I should actually ask Representative Creech if you have a final word. I'm so sorry about that.
Just two quick words, and if I could, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hewitt, thanks for your questions. One thing I would caution, and by the way, thank you for the additional authors of Representative Pryor, Scott, Representative Juergens, Haley's, and others. But the one thing that every group that has come to me from education, and I'm sure you've all heard it as well, is expand our programs, no more mandates. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. So we renew the motion to have House File 579 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion, education omnibus bill. And I just want to thank all the testifiers today and the authors for all the bills before us that help with the health and safety of our kids. We're going to be continuing this discussion tomorrow on education policy with the slate of bills that we're looking at. So with that, we're adjourned.